Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of the fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station, leading to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems, only MagnaGrip eliminates 100% of all cancer-causing toxins within the station. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
In the world of firefighting and public safety, reliability is key. That's why for over two decades, first responders nationwide have trusted the Firestore as their go-to source for essential equipment, apparel, and accessories. From top-of-the-line firefighting gear like helmets, boots, and thermal imaging cameras, the Firestore has it all, tailored to the specific needs of our heroes on the front lines. But they don't stop there. Their extensive selection also includes EMS supplies, safety apparel like flame-resistant clothing and high-visibility gear, as well as a wide array of tools from hand tools to vehicle extrication tools, supporting public safety professionals in their duties. Partnered with industry leaders, the Firestore's commitment to quality and excellence is unmatched, because when it comes to protecting communities, there's no room for compromise. Join the thousands of first responders who rely on the Firestore. Visit thefirestore.com online or in-store today. The Firestore, your reliable partner for fire and public safety equipment.
Taking It to the Streets is all about advancing firefighter safety and operational integrity for the fire service through provocative insights and dynamic discussions dedicated to both the art and science of firefighting and the traditions of the fire service. The focus at Taking It to the Street continues to be straightforward, street-level talk with intelligent, stimulating, and provocative insights and dynamic discussion with interactive dialogue and, most importantly, listener participation. Just like around the kitchen table or in the day room over a cup of coffee at 02:30 after a good run. And now, the latest edition of Taking It to the Streets with your host, Christopher Nall.
Welcome to this edition of Buildings on Fire, Taking It to the Streets. I'm your host, Christopher Nam. On your street, in your city, across the country, and around the world, Buildings on Fire, Taking It to the Streets brings you cutting-edge insights on the built environment, talking about today's building construction, operational challenges, and the insights needed to operate effectively and efficiently on today's demanding fire ground. Certainly want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen into our continuing series of podcasts and webcasts here on fireengineering.com as we continue to talk about the built environment, today's built environment, tomorrow's fire ground, and the challenges facing all of us when we hit the streets and deal with structural fires, building conditions, and the variety of emergency response factors that all of us face each and every day. We finished off recently a six-part series program here on fire engineering, talking about the commercial fire ground, talking about the challenges associated with the built environment response to a variety of different occupancies, occupancy risks, especially when we talk about the hybrid commercial fire ground structures, and especially talking about both new and old related operational conditions. The continuing challenges when we talk about the commercial fire ground in particular in our six-part series revolved around the continuing challenges facing all of us when we do respond to commercial occupied structures, both those that may be vacant, unoccupied, unused at the particular points in time. But identifying the building construction, identifying the challenges associated with hybrid construction in particular, was a common theme through that series. If you have not had an opportunity to listen into the series, go back to fireengineering.com, go to the podcast link, get into the archived library, and do a quick search, whether it be through our title of our program of Buildings on Fire, our last name, both myself, Chief Doug Klein, promoted and facilitated that program for that six-part series. But take a look at that recent offering. We started off again in the latter part of last year, 2023, and rolled our program into 2024 with that continuing series. And again, just finished that off on our last episode. One of the things that we got thinking about here on Buildings on Fire was the continuing challenges facing all of us when we respond out, whether you are at the firefighter rank, at the company officer position, or certainly as incident commanders or the first arriving battalion or deputy chief that are out there responding. In dealing with the continuing challenges of the built environment, it's been a common thread throughout our conversations in all of our series over the many years that we've had the opportunity to present and have a conversation with everyone. But I think it's important to note that as we take a moment to step back, especially as we approach FDIC week coming up here in a couple of weeks here on our annual pilgrimage to FDIC and to Indianapolis to recharge our batteries or to become the first opportunity that you might have had to participate in FDIC as a first timer, or if you've been a long time attendee, it certainly affords us a tremendous degree of insights and opportunities to get training and education, to become exposed to a variety of different philosophies and models and insights, whether they be very specific or general, that might apply to your particular response area. We wanted to take a moment to step back and talk a little bit about the issues affecting all of us when we talk about fire department training as it relates to building construction. And one of the themes that we put together here on our brief episode here on Buildings on Fire is talking about today's built environment, today's issues relative to building construction, whether you are operating in a very complex urban or suburban type setting or a metro-sized organization, or you have a four crossroads street area in your community, which encompasses a number of buildings, residentials, commercials, and so forth, that certainly may be just as challenging as working in a first due in a metro-sized organization. So it's really not the complexity overall. It's certainly a matter of understanding your buildings in your first due, in your response area, and how does that relate to you individually regarding your level of competencies, the skill set, the knowledge base that you may have in your associated rank and positions of responsibility. And that is so, so critical. I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about here today is really have a little bit of a conversation related to the emerging challenges from the built environment, from the evolving built environment, and how that relates back to the evolving issues affecting us from building sciences, talking about rebooting training, looking at the skill set levels, the development for today's fireground, today's company officers and command officers, and you as a firefighter. Certainly, I think everything that we talk about here has to begin on day one. And day one can start in the early stages of your particular career as you advance into the roles and responsibilities and the different rank structures, or it's something that, again, we just recognize at a particular point in time that I personally need to do something to increase my knowledge base, increase my proficiencies, and be able to provide the appropriate level of skill set on the fireground as it relates to the structural fireground in specifics to be able to do the job more effectively, more efficiently, and more safer for yourself, for your company, and to be able to better serve the citizens that you are sworn to protect. I'll say this, and I'll start this off in this fashion. Building construction is as fundamental to structural firefighting as water is to fire suppression. It does not get any simpler than that. Building construction is as fundamental to structural firefighting as water is to fire suppression. If we don't have the capabilities, we don't understand the deliverability of water as such an important tool and resource, but a significant impact on how it affects fireground operations, the lack of building construction knowledge is as important. It is so fundamental to structural firefighting. It is just as important as it is to have the availability and water to fire suppression. So it's a very important, certainly a term. It's a catchphrase, and I think it's certainly much more than just a catchphrase. It really is fundamental to the American Fire Service, the North American Fire Service, and really on an international global basis. Construction, building construction, and an understanding of the built environment continues to be one of the most underrated and certainly the most lacking when we talk about the focal point on training, knowledge, and skill sets that we continue to neglect. I really truly believe that the fire service continues to turn its back and purposely neglect the study of building construction to the extent that is needed, truly needed, on today's fire ground. So we're going to talk a little bit about a model approach to building construction, much more than just talking about the fundamentals of building construction, but a model approach that changes up the manner in which we both study building construction and the built environment, and more importantly, how we apply that to today's fire ground. And I think that's the important alignment and the linkage, is that the building construction skill sets that we need have to align to both current, past, and future applications of our built environment, those types of structures that have yet to be built or are being built, the variety and the changes in construction that are not fundamentally the same as they were 20, 30, 40, or 50 years ago, and again, are going to certainly impact you in any given point in time when you show up on the first do at the curbside and have a structural fire in a particular occupancy, in a particular type of building construction that requires and demands of you and your company and the entire balance of that first due alarm assignment to have some precaticated knowledge of that building, far more than just showing up, doing a quick read on the building, sizing it up, and stretching the line and going in. It is much more than stretching the line and going in at today's fire ground. And fundamentally, we'll talk a little bit about yesterday's fire ground here in a moment. But again, if you're going to command or tactically engage at a structural fire, you better understand the building. There's limited margin for error on today's evolving fire ground. And I'll say this, that errors and omissions are unforgiving. That it is so, so important for us to comprehend that, that back in the day, we had the latitude, we had the ability to have errors and omissions on the fire ground, and we could mess up on the fire ground, we could misread the building, misread the location of the fire, misread the time for engagement, misread the gallon per minute flow rates that were required. We'd stretch the line, we would operate in these particular environments, and we more often than not got away with it, not by the skill set level that we had, but more often than not, just by sheer fortitude, which sometimes does get the job done, but at the same time, through a lot of luck and divine intervention. And I'll say this, is that stretching and operating in a building that you have no knowledge of or insights of is considered derelict at best, and placing you and your company certainly at risk. So we need to certainly embrace and understand that as we get into our conversation here today. I think the importance of building construction and building sciences for today's fire officers, for today's fire ground, regardless of whether you're operating in a volunteer combination or career capacities, whether you are operating in a metro-sized organization or in a small single station, minimally staffed volunteer house, it is so, so important to understand the aspects of training, knowledge, skill sets, the abilities, building intel that's necessary, as well as the biases that come about through the aspects of building knowledge, building reads, and understand how that is so, so important to putting that together for fireground leadership, and more importantly, for effective and efficient fireground operations. And again, I think it's mission critical when we talk about operations and firefighter safety. It has everything to do with our fireground operations when we talk about the importance of building construction. So again, it's very, very critical that we understand that, comprehend that, and number two, embrace that. And I would say this too, that many times we'll hear both in the training environment, as I've traveled around the United States delivering these types of programs, you know, you'll sometimes hear the old adage saying, you know, don't confuse me. All I want to do is stretch the line and go in. And it is so, so much more than that as we get into our conversation here. So, again, as we talk about the built environment, both buildings on fire, the fire ground, there are a couple of influences. And those influences relate back to the built environment, building construction, and fire ground operations. They are integral. They are influenced to each other. And that's why I say that one cannot exist without the other. And unfortunately, there are times in which the study and focal point of building construction, building codes, fire dynamics, fire engineering are set aside and not integrated in the conversation, in the presentation of those conversations, and in within certainly the curriculums that are out there. They typically, we have our programs associated with building construction, we have our programs dealing with fire protection or fire protection engineering, and then we also have our strategy, tactics, command level conversations that, although talk about construction, they are not integrated as they should be to such of the extent as we are promoting and certainly suggesting. I think it's safe to say too that the fireground influencers that are coming about, certainly as a result of research, insights, and the influence of research as they relate both to structural integrity, compartment fire performance, the aspects of time, the considerations of delta time or the elapse of time on today's fireground, and firefighting impacts that come about from that. Some of you may be familiar with the recent offering that has come about. It's actually not as recent as I'm suggesting or indicating, but in 2021, the NFPA published the NFPA 1700 standard, excuse me, the 1700 guideline. It is not a standard. It is a guide that provides some insight. So it's distinctively different than the consensus types of standards that we have out there that are standards that do have legality-related applications. When they are adopted, this is just a guide. But this guide for structural firefighting relates back to structural firefighting strategy, tactics, and tasks that are supported by science-based research. And again, the NFPA 1700 guide was published in 2021. If you have not had the opportunity to, number one, be aware of it, and secondly, have not had an opportunity to read, take a look at what is being suggested in that particular guide, I would highly encourage you to go to the NFPA website, do a quick search for the NFPA 1700 guide, and you will be able to access that. It is free currently to be able to at least view and read the document. Unfortunately, you cannot cut and paste, nor can you download or print any of that particular information, but it is accessible without financial obligations of paying for that document online. So I would encourage you to take a look at that. We will talk a little bit about that as we get into our conversation here, but again, it's pretty significant. We talk about some of the insights that are derived from both structural firefighting insights, the aspects of strategy, tactics, task considerations supported by the insights coming out of science-based research. One of the programs that we have been doing over the last 18 months nationally is a program that primarily focuses in on building construction and the related considerations that both research and the evolving sciences have provided. And I think the considerations there is that when we take a look at the influence of building construction on decision-making, both at the company and the command level, and that's the title of our program, building construction and the influence of science and decision-making on fireground operations is something that needs to, again, be promoted more. We need to have a clear understanding and a delineation of how important construction is to our decision-making process, how it truly influences much of what we do in every facet of that operation, and have a greater appreciation and the skill set that align with that particular aspect. The other thing that I'll draw your attention to is the NFPA 1710 standard. And again, this is on the career side of the fence. We talk about fireground operations and the deployment, the operations, the conduct, and the administration of career operations, and that's what the 1710 standard is for. The 2020 edition has had significant updates and changes to that when we talk about rebooting the fireground, and one of the important changes in there is associated with the gallon per minute flow rates, specifically to building construction issues. Many of you should be familiar, and it's been in place for a number of years, well over 15 to 20 years, but predominantly the 1710 standard as it has existed for a number of years, primarily associated with 300 gallon per minute flow rates, associated with 2,000 square foot residentials as the occupancy and building types that required two lines being flowing with a combined sustainability of 300 gallon per minute flows, of which one line would typically be 150 GPMs. The 1710 has changed in 2020, which now relates back to a sustainable gallon per minute flow rate of 500 GPMs. And that has also changed to include up to three lines flowing. It aligns with some of the considerations out of the 1700 guide. It also aligns much more with the gallon per minute flow rates when we talk about targeted GPM flows for the types of fire load packages, both in our residential and certainly in our commercial buildings, with a 500 gallon per minute flow rate for those structures between 13,000 and 19,600 square feet. So you can start seeing the alignment is to both the mini and mega mansions, our larger square foot area residentials, and certainly when we talk about commercial structures and occupancies. Let's take a moment here and just step back, and we'll talk a little bit about fireground influencers. I think when we discuss some of the old school principles, the conflicts with new science, and the continuing issues, when we talk about the aspects of where the street and the firehouse conversations are occurring, and some of those common denominators. So let me talk a little bit about a couple of things here that will set us up for the conversation on curriculum-based issues, knowledge, skills, and abilities, the need for additional training, critical thinking, and conservative bias. I think those are four aligned issues. We talk about training, talk about education, we talk about critical thinking, and we talk about conservative bias. Those are four attributes that are certainly critical for today's fireground. And let's talk for a moment here about some of the old school aspects. We talk about, I think, yesterday's fireground. And one of the common themes and threads in many of our conversations as we present those in our programs, and actually is going to be a common theme as as early as our upcoming program here in 2024 at FDIC here, one of the things that we are going to do in our workshop at FDIC is talk about some of the criticalities, and we'll actually expand upon some of the things that we're presenting here in this program, on this episode, talking about yesterday's fireground as relates to some things that set us up both positively and also set us up negatively when we talk about operations in buildings in our structural fireground conditions on today's fireground. So I'll talk about a couple of things here that we've identified and are the bullet points that relate back to why is it that we do certain things on today's fireground? Why is it that we align some of our practices, and they may be inclusive of best practices from back in the day to today, without a clear understanding about some of the dramatic changes that have occurred in our built environment. So if you have been a consistent, conscientious listener to our programs here on Buildings on Fire throughout the many years that we've been being hosted here at Fire Engineering, you will hear some of the same type of themes. You'll hear about yesterday's fireground, today's fireground, the demands, and so forth. We talk a lot about the elapse of time, the aspects of delta time, and so bear that in mind as we get into this conversation with a few bullet points that I want to share. So I think it's important that first and foremost, we understand that the built environment, I would say, is developing faster with greater complexity and greater hazards and greater risk to firefighting and firefighters than the tactical models are providing for. So again, let me reiterate and say that again. The built environment is developing faster with greater complexity and greater hazards and risks to firefighters than the tactical models are providing for. So whether we talk about the latest insights and suggested modeling that is coming out of research and development, or the suggested models and insights that might be promoted by any one of the leading instructors and fire officers that are out there promoting their particular take on firefighting, their particular take on strategy, tactics, operation, training, or what have you. But it has to be much more than stretching the line and going in. I would say this is that the built environment, we talk about architecture, engineering, building sciences, fire protection engineering, these are all very dependent, professional disciplines, whether they talk about architecture, engineering, building sciences, construction, fire protection engineering. These are consistent, stable related disciplines that evolve with the trends that result in newer types of buildings, newer types of building materials. But they are so dependent upon what we, the fire services, need to embrace, comprehend, understand, and more importantly, implement on the fire ground. We have a very rapidly changing and evolving building sciences, architectural and engineering profession that are continuing to introduce new types of methods and materials of construction. We talk about modern methods of construction, the MMC. Those are critical when we talk about what is being put into the newest buildings. And if we don't comprehend and understand, if we aren't anticipating, if we aren't recognizing the types of hybrid structures that are being built and just relying on yesterday's fireground principles and training, we are setting ourselves up for certainly a challenging, if not catastrophic level of operation on today's fireground. I think it's safe to say that the American Fire Service is functionally illiterate. And by that, I mean is that we know enough to get by, but not nearly enough to comprehend and understand the criticality of building sciences as it relates to fireground operations. There are four reads to our fireground. We talk about reading the fireground, reading the building, reading the compartment, and reading the company. Those are things that we have been continuing to advocate and are a common theme going all the way back to the early 2000s, 2004 and 5. We introduced the concept of reading the building to the American Fire Service. That has continued to be embraced as a institutionalized element of both fireground size up. We hear it much more today. When we first talked about it and conceived this notion of reading the building, it was pretty straightforward in terms of assessing and looking at the building, identifying critical aspects of that building that provide clear guidance and sometimes clear delineated direction on things that are going to affect our operations, whether they be time factors regarding operational time within the building, building integrity factors in terms of how long do we have to operate on top, underneath, within a particular occupancy on a fire floor or around that building before adverse conditions, compromise and collapse came about. So there are some common themes here that we relate to that, and we expanded that out a few years back. We introduced, actually at FDIC a number of years ago, this integrated concept of the four fireground reads: reading the fireground, reading the building, reading the compartment or reading the fire, and then reading the company, introducing and the aspects of human performance as they relate to the company. And again, a number of organizations and others have embraced that, have expanded that concept out. But that was first and fundamental to our building modeling that has been consistent certainly over the last 24 years that we've been promoting and advocating and continuing to introduce these concepts to the American Fire Service. So very, very critical when we talk about that. And one of the things that when we talk about the built environment is it certainly feels as though it's overwhelming. And I think when we talk about building construction, the training aspects of it, the application of it, unfortunately, we end up reducing it to some very limited sound bites. And again, it's either overwhelming, it becomes overtly simplified, it becomes significantly filtered and disregarded and sometimes completely ignored, which goes back to the comments I had a few moments ago, is that I think that the fire service in general continues to turn its back or ignores the importance of construction, building construction. And it's much more than just building construction, but building sciences and the ability to integrate that into everything that we do on today's fireground. We are seeing some of those inroads that research and development and those insights that research is suggesting, the findings from that research, again, have everything to do with the compartment, the room and contents in which fires originate, the fire load packages that eventually extend from a room of contents to a structural fire that now affects the structural integrity of that building that we are operating within, around, or on top of. But so it's fundamentally goes right back to it. But again, it's become diluted. Unfortunately, it's resulted in just 2 to 12 hour sound bites, whether we talk about the types of training that we are familiar with. It becomes diluted from that particular standpoint. Typically, it's 24 pages, 12 to 14 chapters, 400 pages of information, and we continue to operate at a grammar school level of operations when, in fact, we should be operating and have the skill sets at the graduate level of operations. So part of this reverts back to yesterday's fire ground. And just listen in and think about some of the following bullet points that I'm going to get into. So yesterday's fire ground, and how does that impact everything that we do today? Yesterday's fire ground, common identifiable building construction and methods of construction. Buildings behaved, rules of engagement, pretty simple, straightforward, simple operations, simple tactics, direct engagement. When we talk about prescriptive construction-based tactics, our buildings that were primarily defined by the five fundamental building types provided us with a prescriptive perspective on construction-based tactics. And that's pretty much what we continue to operate under in terms of our current models and methodologies. Fire dynamics matched fire suppression. Process, models, and practices. They were all aligned in a pretty consistent basis. So fire dynamics matched both the fire suppression, the process, the models, and the types of methodologies and the practices deployed on today's fire ground. Time was not an issue. Time was not as much of a concern back in the day, yesterday's fire ground, as it is today. Today, everything is really derived from and should be monitored. If it's not, then again, there's some issues dealing with how you're operating. But everything on today's fire ground, as it relates to structural fire ground operations, must match and must have a direct consideration for the elapse of time. Time is a critical issue on today's fire ground. But again, yesterday's fire ground, time was not an issue as it is such a paramount issue today. And I think the other important aspect here is that buildings allowed us to do our job. Buildings allowed us to do our job from the standpoint that we would stretch the line. Even if we did not have the appropriate level of skill sets, we'd size up the building, we'd go into an operational mode. Buildings behaved, buildings allowed us to do the job. Personnel knew and did their jobs. Proficiency, discipline, rigor, it was mission above all. Clear expectations, simple technology, manual, physical, brute force, and determination got the job done. That's always been the case. But again, we had time. We had people. We could mess up and still get the job done, and we still live or still have the ability to survive the adverse conditions on the fire ground. We could not know our job and still be part of it. Teams could get away with it. And again, it was acceptable. If we didn't have proficiency levels that were consistent within the fire ground environment, or certainly at the company level, those that didn't know their jobs could get lost in the woodwork, get lost in the background, and still maybe mess up on the fire ground, jobs still got done. We were slow to change. Change was discussed, debated, vetted, accepted, and then implemented. And again, we embraced tradition while we were making it. And I think that's pretty simple and straightforward. I'll say this. So listen through this particular quote as I get into the details. Each year, a sizable percentage of the numbers of firefighters killed is a result of structural collapse. There are cases on record where the deaths from collapse were a direct result from faulty size up by officers because of their lack of knowledge of building construction, fire behavior, and the rate of water application. So earlier we talked about gallon per minute flow rate. So again, each year a sizable percentage of the number of firefighters killed is the result of structural collapse. There are cases on record where the deaths from collapse were a direct result of faulty size up by officers because of their lack of knowledge of building construction, fire behavior, and the rate of water application. Those are not current words. They certainly resonate with everything that we're talking about here today thus far. But Chief Lloyd Lehman talked about those in 1951 in his defining book on firefighting tactics. So in 1951, Lloyd Lehman, who was the father of the indirect attack, he was a father of and first introduced into the American Fire Service and actually into the global aspects of firefighting, the concept of little drops of water, of fog stream applications, when in time and place had everything to do with straight stream operations. So for those of you that don't know who Chief Lloyd Lehman is or was, I would encourage you to do a little research. But these were the words of Lloyd Lehman in 1951 in the defining book of firefighting tactics, which was one of the first books that was written, talking about the subject area, talking about building instruction, introduced the concept of size up on the American fireground, and was also talking about the aspects of fire behavior in a time and place that that we were seeing some rapid changes, both in terms of construction, the types of evolving residential construction that was far different than the multiple occupancies, the tenement types of structures that were very common in that particular time frame, as well as a new type of construction and materials that were coming about out of the post-World War II era of the late 1940s and early 1950s. So certainly a lot to be said when we relate that back to it. One of the things that also should be noted here when we talk about this common thread about the built environment is that we're familiar with the NIOSH top five. You should be familiar, as we've discussed in our previous episodes. Again, take a look at some of our lessons and learnings from the fireground, some of our episodes in 2023 in the Fire Engineering Archives. One of the things that we talked about, and it is a very important aspect, is that when the University of Georgia did a root cause analysis of the numerous line of duty deaths that were captured out of the NIOSH firefighter line of duty death reports, and they did a deep dive, did a root cause analysis within that particular academic study that they undertook. One of the four root cause analysis, the most dominant one that I feel is worthy of discussion and has a direct linkage here in our conversation here on our program, is the inadequate preparation for or the anticipation of adverse events during operations. So again, a lot of academic words in that particular thing, but listen to it again. Inadequate preparation for or the anticipation of adverse events during operations. So primarily what it's saying is that commanding officers are not anticipating or are preparing for or adverse events before they occur. We are very, very good at reacting to, in a reactionary manner, mayday, mayday, I got a building collapse, mayday, mayday, I've got a flashover, whatever the adverse condition is. We are good at addressing the event after the fact, but not really good at doing what? Reading the fireground, reading the building, comprehending and understanding, you know, the smoke and heat conditions and heat signatures, not comprehending the variety of communications, verbal, the visual indicators and so forth, and having the skill set that puts all of that together to be able to anticipate the adverse event, whether it be a compromise or a collapse or adverse environmental conditions relative to that compartment before they occur. So it's very, very critical. It goes back to the fundamentals that we continue to advocate. There are three fundamentals on today's fireground. It's the building, it's the compartment, it's the company. And it also relates back to reading the fireground, reading the building, reading the compartment and or fire, and then reading the company. So the question of the day is, again, it's got to be much more than luck. And again, when we talk about the issues, how do I know what I don't know if I don't know it? And that's very, very critical when we talk about those aspects at the company officer and the command level positions of responsibility. But again, how do I know what I don't know if I don't know it? Which leads us into this whole conversation of building anatomy, this aspects of the continuing aspects of the built environment, the demanding fireground, and the aspects that, again, the built environment is developing faster with greater complexity, with greater hazards and risks to firefighters and to the fireground than the tactical models are providing for, which leads us into our conversation about literacy, the overwhelming nature of building construction, I think it's safe to say that for many of you, the study of building construction is certainly overwhelming. We're seeing much more spotlight on the aspects of building construction, predominantly because of the conversations and the dialogue due to UL and NIST and the evolving issues that come out of research and science that are fundamental. Again, when we talk about the aspects of the compartment, fire load packages, fire development, again, it goes from a room and contents eventually to a structural fire. And there are certainly a lot of other working pieces here. Unfortunately, I truly believe that they become diminished. They become filtered. There are certainly many other focal points that unfortunately take the place of the limited time that we may have. But again, I think it's the lack of institutionalization, the lack of uniformity, the lack of functional importance of the domain of building construction as it relates to the fire service profession. And unfortunately, it also conflicts with the blue-collar persona and the aspects of aggressive firefighting. And again, we see a lot of this anecdotal types of influences, these types of stressors. But fundamentally, it goes back to reading the building, reading the fire ground, reading the compartment, reading the company, understanding the tactical windows, and understanding how both building risks are important, occupancy risks, and then the third aspect of criticality is behavioral risk. So it's building risks, it is occupancy risk, and there are behavioral risks. So they align with some of the things that we were introduced to back in the day. And back in the day when we talked about managing risks, there was a standard, there was a process, there were some considerations, and fire ground risks often became associated with the late Chief Alan Brunicini's motto, or the encouragement of risk a lot to save a lot, risk a little to save a little, and risk nothing to what already has been lost. So those words sometimes fall on deaf ears because we don't institutionalize, we don't comprehend, we don't understand what those risks are. We've tried to introduce those into some different modeling as we discuss them, but it's certainly a very critical element of consideration overall when we associate that to different tactical models and so forth. Chief Brunicini gave us that particular phrase when we talk about everything, and many firefighters continue to be able to recite that, but what does it really mean? The other thing that I'll make reference back to is the 2012 double line of duty death report that occurred in the city of Philadelphia, where we introduced in that NIOSH report the concept of the building occupancy risk profiling and model that talked about different levels of severity and risk associated from everything from negligible to normal to marginal to critical and catastrophic in terms of the levels of risk severity, and then tied that back into the simple concept of operational probability of risk. So if you're not familiar with it, again, we've talked about that in a number of previous episodes as such. So certainly something to think about. Traditionally, when we talk about building construction, we talk about in-service training. We talk about some of this information that we gain out of the job within the training environment, the drill environment, the captain's drills and quarters, or the types of in-service or academy-level training that any one of us may be receiving or have received in the past. I think part of that, again, there's a lack of benchmarks or pattern recognition. We could talk about common themes affecting decision making and operational issues on the fire ground that revolve around building construction. It's a lack of recognition prime decision making, or what we call naturalistic decision making, that is all significantly part of our experience and how we gain experience on the fire ground. It's a lack of critical thinking, indecisive decision making, the lack of conservative bias, the lack of risk management, the lack of time, the lack of resources, the lack of human performance and human performance barriers. It's also a lack of knowledge, skills, and abilities, and the lack of discipline when we relate that back to it. So I'll take a step back here to talk a little bit more about the construction side of it. And I want to introduce a couple of different themes here to you that our research has identified and is really part and parcel to our conversation here in our episode talking about aligning building construction training and knowledge. Traditionally, again, we have always related back to building construction training aligning with the five fundamental building types. And those five fundamental building types include type one, whether it be Roman numeral one or the number one, one through five. But type one is always has been referred to as fire resistive construction. Type two is non-combustible. Type three is ordinary. Type four is heavy timber. And type five, dealing with wood frame construction. But each one of those has a significant amount of layering when we talk about how does type one construction, or I'll give you this particular insight. There is now a new type four construction that does not fall under the traditional guise of type four heavy timber construction that commonly was associated with mill and semi-mill or heavy timber construction for those buildings built in the latter part of the 1800s, early part of the 1900s. We have a new evolving type four heavy timber construction that is actually referred to as mass timber. So there is a new type four mass timber construction that is now embedded within the international both building and fire code, coming out of the International Code Council that has been around for a couple of years, continues to be evolving. So we need to be much more aware of that, especially when we talk about mass timber and the types of structures, especially hybrid construction structures in the commercial building occupancy standpoint that now are inclusive of both type two non-combustible construction and now very well may have CLT, cross-laminated timber, or heavy timber, mass timber constructed components that are part of the new modern methods of construction and materials that are being introduced in our buildings that change up the game, change up entirely how we are operating and influencing our operations. Let me take a step back for a moment here and introduce you to a couple of different things that revolve around building construction from back in the day. And back in the day, going all the way back almost to 100 years, going back to 1932, the first textbook for the American Fire Service was published in 1932. That first textbook was the Fire Chief's Handbook, and that was published by the International Association of Fire Chiefs. In that particular era of times of the 1920s and 30s, there were numerous fire journals that were being published and being introduced, but the Fire Chief's Handbook was the first book, the first textbook introduced into the American Fire Service that specifically brought forward the best practices that were existing and were being promoted and implemented across the United States in a time in which the fire service was very much in evolution and changing very, very rapidly, not only because of the internal changes going from, again, the horse-drawn era to the mechanical and apparatus types of conditions, but also technology was being introduced into the fire service, as well as technology being introduced into the types of buildings and the changing environments, the introduction of the low-rise to high-rise structures, and an evolving trend in that era of time of the introduction of new methods and materials of construction. But again, that particular book was very significant because it was also introducing this concept of the modern era of building construction and the modern era, it was introducing the modern era of building construction. And I'm going to read to you a couple of critical things here that are very time dependent. So listen to this again, quote unquote, the fire service profession has been referred to frequently in recent years as a science. In the broad sense of the term and as practiced by the well-trained modern fire department, it may be so classed. Much constructive thought has been given the subject during the past 3 years, and out of this has become a fairly well-established procedure in combating fire. The greatest growth of the number of both city and state fire colleges and short courses has made a marked effect in developing and making uniform the operations in fire extinguishment. So this was written, again, in 1932, in which we, again, hear this rhetorical and the sort of the rhetoric that's out there talking about the blue collar era. But in that blue collar era of the 1920s and 1930s, again, when old school had everything to do with old school, they were considering the modern, well-trained modern fire department, as it was called then, was that the firefighting profession, as referred to frequently in those recent years of the late 20s and early 1930s, that the profession of firefighting was considered a science. And here we are today still arguing and going back and forth about some of those particular attributes and aspects. And it's much more than stretching the line. They talked about the first duty of the fire department at fires, again, was the protection of life. But they also talked about the aspect that the aspects of protection of life, so may the delay of applying water to that fire was the aspects of doing the first due and focusing in on fire rescue. So the whole aspects of why we promote rescue first and foremost, the fire service recognized that in that era of time, and that's the genesis of that. But they also made the following statement: the same appraisal of life holds in the case of members of the fire department. So although they were promoting that the service and life sustaining focal point of saving the life of the civilians that we are sworn to protect, they also very clearly delineated in that document, in that first textbook, is that the same appraisal of life and the protection of life should be held to members of the fire department. So I'll just leave it at that relative to that particular insight. Well, one of the things I want to key in here as we get into the conversation is that this first textbook focused in on, again, it was compiled in 1928, published in 1932. And in that particular textbook was the first delineation talking about size up being the quick survey of situations as encountered by the fire department upon arrival, upon the first due. Life hazard was recognized as one of the predominant items in the introduction of property protection or property hazard. So when we talk about where did we come about, where did this whole concept and theory behind life hazard and property conservation or property hazard protection, it came about in 1932 in the first edition of the Fire Chief's Handbook. So it wasn't in the last 20 or 30 years. It wasn't in some particular textbook that many are making reference to online. It's just, again, this anecdotal information, but we can say with the highest degree of confidence based upon our research that the origination of the concept of size up, that also was influenced by Lloyd Lehman in 1951 when he gave us our size up consideration and bullet points that he derived in 1951, all originated in 1928 based upon the insights out of the IAFC's committee, training committee to identify best practices nationally and put together the first book, the first textbook that talked about size up, some of the critical elements of that. They also, in that textbook, talked about the importance of the initial plan of operation is based upon the first arriving officer, and upon the first arriving officer rests the heaviest responsibility. So, again, in that type of terminology and lexicon of the 1930s, they talked about the heaviest responsibility rests with the first arriving officer and the development of an initial operational plan. That plan also related back to understanding construction types, understanding the development and the location of fire. Each type of construction has its own characteristics, which falls fundamentally on what we've been promoting here around the five fundamental aspects of today's fireground and the domains that go well beyond the five classical aspects of building types that are derived out of the NFPA 220 standard. Size up became critical, sizing up the building, talking about building height, talking about construction, talking about the number and locations of openings, which was so critical, talking about occupancy type. The concept of occupancy risk is actually derived out of the 2007 line of duty death of Kyle Wilson in Prince Williams County, Virginia, loss of life in a large area residential structure. That concept was born out of the after action report out of Prince William's County that talked about residential occupancies and how that particular 6,000 square foot residential occupancy had a different type of occupancy risk. So although we talk about sort of in a common standpoint, residential occupancies, type 5 wood frame construction, there are significant differences of risk that are associated with those particular elements. So again, going back to the 1932 building construction focal point in the IAFC's building construction handbook, again, they talked about exposure issues, both internal and external, and lo and behold, they also talked about wind considerations. So in 1932, that first book on the aspects of fireground operations that was capturing best practices throughout the United States in the blue-collar era that we always refer back to, in which they, meaning the fire service in that era of time, was also talking about the professionalism and the firefighting profession as being a referred to as a science. So again, 2024, we're trying to separate that all out. We've been constantly having this rhetoric and arguments and discussions going on over the last certainly 14 to 15 years about separating the blue collar era from that of science and how they are separate. Unfortunately, you know, we go back to the genesis. They were talking about these things back in 1932, almost 100 years ago to the date. They also talked about scientifically and carefully fought fires. Those are the words that are extracted directly out of that textbook. Scientifically and carefully fought fires, extinguished quickly, confined to the smallest area. And here's the other mic drop, is direct to the seat of the fire by interior means when possible. So the whole genesis of why we fight fires internally was based upon the scientifically and carefully fought fires that they were recognizing in 1932, that the best way to fight fires was internally, going directly to the seat of the fire by interior means when possible, and again, confining to the smallest area based upon science, the emerging science that was coming about, and understanding the importance of building construction that was related back to the best practices that were captured throughout the United States in that time. So I want to clearly define and set for the record, as we have been continuing to promote this nationally, certainly over the last 14 years, is that the genesis and trying to extinguish these kinds of rhetorical, anecdotal arguments that are out there, and trying to embrace some things that were set forward in the blue-collar era of the fire service in the 30s and 40s, and certainly in the war years of the 70s, and how we constantly are trying to connect these dots out of that. Which leads us back into some common aspects here when we talk about building construction and technical insights. The couple of defining books that were available in the early 1900s, which that set into motion a couple of different things here, was the Crosby, Fisk, Foster Handbook of Fire Protection. These editions came out all the way in 1914, all the way up to about 1941. And those were editions number 5 through editions number 9. And I only say this is that they are available in various degrees of quality, I guess, for better words, or in terms of wear and tear online. But you can get the Crosby, Fisk, and Foster handbooks. They do cost a considerable amount online through a variety of different online book services, but if you did have the opportunity to get some insights from them, I have been very fortunate. I have all of the fire protection handbooks, both the NFPA handbooks as well as the Crosby, Fisk, and Foster handbooks, going back all the way to 1910. Original copies, they're on my shelf here in my home office. In 1948, in the 10th edition, the NFPA started now publishing, and many of us are familiar with the NFPA Fire Protection Handbooks. And again, there's a variety of other architectural books that have been written over the years that sort of align some things to them. That takes us up to this current focal point here. So we talk about the importance of building construction. It's probably safe to say that there has been no defining book more important to the American Fire Service other than Francis Brannigan's book, Building Construction for the Fire Service. That was first published in November of 1971. It was the first fire service textbook specifically focusing in on building construction. It defined and influenced the fire service for certainly the next 20 years. And Francis Brannigan, who passed away in 2006, again, provided a wealth of insights to a couple of generations of the fire service throughout the latter part of the 1970s and 80s, all the way up through the 1990s, and almost right up to the time in which he passed in the early 2000s. He provided both extensive national lecturing and writings and gave us a tremendous degree of insight. So the Brannigan book, again, for many, think it's, again, very technical, limiting in scope in terms of its extent. There were 9 chapters, 288 pages in that first edition. But again, that format and the content pretty much established and defined everything that we continue to train on regarding building construction, its alignment to the type 1 through 5 construction categories that align with the NFPA 220 standard. And that continues to influence everything that we do on today's fireground. It certainly influences much of what we revert to regarding the study and application of building construction. So chapter 1 related back to just an introduction. Chapter 2 related to construction principles. Chapter 3 was wood frame construction, and it went on from there. It talked about ordinary construction, mill construction, talked about 19th century fireproof construction, then went on to talk about fire-resistive construction, concrete, steel construction. So that had laid out in 1971, those 9 defining chapters, 288 pages, influences everything that we do today in terms of our study of building construction and how it relates back to content and the template of building construction. Unfortunately, that has not kept up with the evolving nature of those particular applications. The first edition, 1971, 288 pages. The second edition in 1982 jumped up to 382 pages. The third edition in 1992, 643 pages. And I would, again, it's safe to say that one of the best books written on the subject of building construction, although dated when we talk about the third edition of 1992, 643 comprehensive pages that really started getting into the details that were necessary, but again, considered to be overwhelming. Fourth, fifth, and sixth editions, 2009, 2016, and 2019. The current sixth edition, published in 2019, 474 pages, but again, is pretty consistent with the template that that Francis Brannigan defined in 1971. The latest editions, editions 4 through 6, have been written and sort of under the auspices of Glenn Corbett, who's well known here in fire engineering. And I think it's safe to say that the fourth edition that was issued out in 2009 was probably the least favorable edition, just based upon some changes that occurred from that particular standpoint. But why is it that we are studying building construction in the manner that we are? There are a number of other books that came about as we start wrapping up at least this edition of our conversation. The ISTA manuals that came out dealing with building construction, principles for the fire service, Chief Dunn's series that came out in the 1980s and early 1990s, talking about the collapse of burning buildings, the National Fire Academy's course on building construction was issued out in 1982, and I will take a moment to really draw your attention to that particular the lecture series that came about in 1982, but the fact that as one of the takeaways, I would encourage you to go to the National Fire Academy's online pages. So go online to the NFA's website and then go to the online programs and online classes that are available. One of the best takeaways that any one of you could invest some time and effort on is to take the online class of the building construction, it's been updated, the building construction course series offered by the National Fire Academy. It has been updated. It's an online version that you can take online at your own pace. But if you are lacking some insights on building construction, I would highly encourage you to take that along with many of the other opportunities that are out there. But for those of you that are trying to find an opportunity to gain some training, to gain some insights on building construction, that is first and foremost. I think it's safe to say that the templated curriculums that are out there, both Mike Smith coming out of out of Washington, D.C., Jim Smith coming out of Philadelphia, talking about building construction. He had a wealth of insights that were being published out through a number of decades of time. John Mittendorf gave us some good insights on some building construction elements. And certainly Chief John Norman, the Fire Officer's Handbook for Building Construction, Fire Officer's Guide to Fire Operations, gave us some insights within those particular areas. Unfortunately, we continue to see the widening issues dealing with technical information that's needed. We're seeing a widening aspect of building construction sciences coming out of the methods and materials of construction, building performances, architectural engineering, fire protection. We're seeing the need for a much higher degree of competencies and skill sets dealing with the application of fire ground management and operations, risk management. We continue to see varying risk associated with the aging infrastructure of our buildings, the variety of different hybrid structures, the variables associated with adaptive reuse of our buildings, hybrid construction, and the evolving technologies that are coming about from that. All of these are highly suggesting that we need to have a much more refined and aligned type of training, competency, skill set, knowledge, a baseline level of knowledge that is needed and demanded of all of our current practicing company officers, commanders, and incident commanders. We need to have a much more modularized domain and approach to the functional areas of both construction and materials, and integrate that both in terms of strategy, tactics, risk, safety, and operations, and more importantly, align that to an integrated approach of decision-making for fire ground operations. One of the things that we introduced a while back, and again, it's been well over 15 years that we first started talking about aligning the study of building construction, aligning that to sort of the current trends that we are introducing. One of the things that our first arriving construction tactics and safety models, that first arriving FACTS, F-A-C-T-S, again, we've talked about it here on our programs. We have introduced it and have talked about it quite extensively on our social media platforms, and are going to be talking about it more so coming up here in the next couple of months here, both in terms of the availability of some new modeling and some new opportunities and material that'll be introduced here for fire engineering. We first started talking about some of these in the latter part of last year. We were hoping to roll out these particular series in the third to fourth quarter of 2024. Unfortunately, some of the those opportunities just did not align with our plans and so forth. I'm happy to say that you will see in the upcoming couple of months here on fireengineering.com and both within the hard copy magazine, as well as on the various platforms and applications within the Clarion stable of programs, both in Firefighter Nation and the applications on fireengineering.com and within the social media settings of the various templates there, some very much aligned programs that align with our first arriving construction series. They will align with our five-star command model. We truly believe that the study of building construction aligns with five fundamental areas. They include building anatomy, the era and vintages of our buildings, the occupancy types and occupancy risks associated with our buildings. That's item number two. Is the aspects of collapse and compromise as the characteristic of a building. It is the methods and the materials of construction that went into the building. And the fifth piece of that is the aspects of fire dynamics. So when we talk about the study of building construction and its application of size up and decision-making, it has everything to do with five fundamental pieces: building anatomy, as it relates to error and vintage. Occupancy type and risk is number two. The collapse and compromise of the structure relative to its characteristics, item number three. Item number four, the methods and materials of construction. And the fifth item, or the fifth domain, is the aspects of fire dynamics and how fire travels and affects a building. Those are the five critical elements here that go back into this model that we are aligning with the NFPA 1700 guide, the standards of NFPA 1561, 1500, 1710, and 1720, trying to align them with building construction, structural considerations, fire dynamics, building predictability, performance that are critical to them, and then looking at both the strategic and tactical alignments, strategic considerations dealing with the pre-arrival, the initial arrival, the 360 survey, assessing fire dynamics and the profiling, risk assessment, identifying strategical options and the influencers, strategical determination, decisions, implementation, process, tactical windows, benchmarks, and PAR. And then when we talk about that as it relates to the tactical modeling, looking at those considerations dealing with tactical considerations of building predictability, performance, fire-specific tactical considerations, both building type and occupancy, tactical windows, benchmarks, preferred techniques and methodologies, alternate techniques and methodologies, safety considerations, and then also the aspects of human performance as they relate to company level considerations and how do I implement those relative to the variables of the first arriving, construction, tactics, and safety. I think it's important to note that, again, we must have adequately skilled, trained, and experienced fire officers. We need to implement building construction training, education, and skill sets. We need to take a look at that, how training must be commensurate with both current and future build-outs in your community regarding the risk associated with the built environment. Don't forget mutual aid considerations. I think it's safe to say that we are training at the minimalist level of capabilities. And unfortunately, many of the current models and some of the training modules that are out there are outdated. They are too general. They are inaccurate and sometimes very, very limiting. You need to build into your schedules the aspects, certainly if not on a quarterly basis, at least on a semi-annual. And even that's too limiting. You cannot just talk about building construction once or twice a year in the formality of an in-service or academy or departmental type of training. It has to be built into everything that you do each and every day. Take a look at some of the suggested minimal topics. We're going to be posting some of those things out there and take a look at some of the threads and themes that are part of it. It's safe to say also, and although we won't talk about it extensively in here in this particular episode, one of our common and recognized themes and sort of our flagship programs continues to be taking the classroom out into the streets and taking the opportunity of looking at your built environment in the streets of your community, in your first dues and so forth. One of our flagship programs that we continue to offer nationally is taking that classroom. And again, it's sort of a hybrid combined program where we both do classroom training. But one of the themes around this is to take the classroom session and eventually go out into the streets. One of the things that we have very successfully done over the last 20 years is doing building reads and size up and studying building construction in the streets, taking a look at building construction within that first due area, reading buildings, doing size up within that setting, whether it be the back alleys or the main streets of your communities. I can't stress enough about what you can do as company command officers if you have that technical capability of going out and doing walk-arounds, doing facilitated lecture tours, as we do, to, again, get accurate, timely information. If you are interested in those, again, reach out. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We will be tying that into some things that we'll be doing at FDIC coming up here during our session here in 2024 with some offline building reads. We'll be doing some things there. We do have an upcoming program both in New York City where we do walking tours, and I do have a number of programs that, again, are being facilitated and hosted by a number of fire department organizations around the United States. And again, if you're interested in bringing this particular program to your first due area in your community, just reach out. I don't want to make this into a sort of a commercial, but again, it's so important to align this training relative to the built environment and put that together in your first due area. I would highly encourage you to take a look at some different aspects of curriculum development. And if nothing else, start looking at the variety of information that's out there that can lend itself to you to make building construction an important facet of your training environment. One of the other takeaways before we close out our program here today is one of the most influential books that I came across in my early academic work at the university when I was going to school to become an architect that was combined with my background within the fire service, but again, quickly aligned along those particular areas. But one of the best books, the best non-fire service related books out there that I would encourage every one of you to obtain is Francis Ching, C-H-I-N-G, Francis Ching's Building Construction Illustrated. That book, again, it's a non-fire service related book, is the best book, non-fire service related book, that you can gain some insights on building construction to help guide you to further your knowledge, skills, and ability in the study of building construction as it relates to the architectural engineering professions, but to gain some insights along with a number of other fire service related books that are out there. If you don't have a copy of the NFPA handbook or a copy of the SFPE, the Society of Fire Protection Engineers handbook, certainly at a minimum, I would encourage you to get a copy of any one of the previous older editions of the Fire Protection Handbook. NFPA Fire Protection Handbook. Some of the older editions can be obtained online for a very, very reasonable cost. And I'm talking about a cost sometimes under $20 or under $10. Those books, although our previous editions, are certainly well worth the cost and still have applicability to give you some insights on the much needed areas. I think if you take a look at a number of the fire service books that are out there that talk about building construction, the Ching's Building Construction Illustrated, and certainly a previous edition of the NFPA handbook, you will certainly be certainly much ahead of the curve on gaining some insights on knowledge. Take a step back and think about where you're at currently in terms of your level of knowledge as it corresponds with your rank and position in the fire service as it relates to your responsibilities on today's fire ground. I think it's safe to say that for many of you, you may not have the appropriate balance of formal knowledge of building construction as it applies to strategy and tactics, as it applies to your current level of responsibility on the fire ground, whether you are an incident commander, first arriving command officer, or first arriving company officer. It's very, very imperative that you gain additional knowledge, skills, and abilities in the subject area, and it's never too late to stop. For those of you that are attending FDIC here in a couple of weeks, I certainly encourage you to maybe find some time if you still have that availability of your time and effort. We are doing a pre-con workshop, a four-hour workshop on the front end of FDIC week on building construction, taking a look at the demands associated with tactical risks associated with a variety of building types and so forth. So take a look at the online catalog. Please, I do encourage you, if you do have some time and effort, to take a seat at the table here at our upcoming workshop. I will be there all week, as will my good colleague, Chief Doug Klein. We'll be also doing our web and podcast live from FDIC on Friday, April 19th at 8 o'clock in the morning. If you're at FDIC, come around and be part of our live audience and see us talking there. Listen in on the live podcast and webcast that'll be simulcasted out from FDIC. And if nothing else, download that edition of our program coming up here in a couple of weeks. So I think we're going to wrap up our program. In our next episode, and maybe we'll talk about this at FDIC, that I think will align with some things. We may pick up our conversation on training aspects for today's fire ground. There's certainly a lot more that we can talk about here. And if we don't do it at FDIC during that podcast, we will certainly do it that at our upcoming next episode. Take a look at all of the pod and webcast series that are available here on Fire Engineering, both the live programs, the tape programs, the recorded programs, I should say, as well as the archive programs, a wealth of information across the broad spectrum of discipline that all of our colleagues that are part of the Fire Engineering family have the ability to provide some insights on a lot of different topical areas. Certainly our our little niche is on building construction. That is so, so important. Like I said at the beginning, at the top of our episode, building construction is as fundamental to structural firefighting as water is to fire suppression. And again, until next time, companies are in quarters and off the air. Stay safe, but keep in mind there's a job being worked somewhere on the streets in your city, across the country, and around the world doing what we do best, and that's being firefighters. So thanks for listening in on this episode of Buildings on Fire, taking us to your streets. I'm your host, Chris Naum. Tune in next time or listen in on any one of our previous podcasts. So stay safe, everybody, and see you next time around.
Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of the fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station, leading to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems, only MagnaGrip eliminates 100% of all cancer-causing toxins within the station. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
In the world of firefighting and public safety, reliability is key. That's why for over two decades, first responders nationwide have trusted the Fire Store as their go-to source for essential equipment, apparel, and accessories. From top-of-the-line firefighting gear like helmets, boots, and thermal imaging cameras, the Fire Store has it all, tailored to the specific needs of our heroes on the front lines. But they don't stop there. Their extensive selection also includes EMS supplies, safety apparel like flame-resistant clothing and high-visibility gear, as well as a wide array of tools from hand tools to vehicle extrication tools, supporting public safety professionals in their duties. Partnered with industry leaders, the Fire Store's commitment to quality and excellence is unmatched, because when it comes to protecting communities, there's no room for compromise. Join the thousands of first responders who rely on the Fire Store. Visit thefirestore.com online or in-store today. The Fire Store, your reliable partner for fire and public safety equipment.